All right. Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of Technical Knockout, TKO, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on, guys?
We're going to cover UFC 293, the shocking upset that happened in the main event, and then we're going to talk about the women's flyweight title at Noche UFC, Grasso versus Shevchenko. Let's do it.
To shock the world, indeed. Holy... Who could have thought?
Yeah, no, that was insane, dude. I mean, he was on it from the jump. Like, Strickland put on an amazing performance. Like, he was clearly very well studied. He listened to his coaches. I was blown away, honestly. I did not expect that. I didn't see it coming.
I did not watch the card. I slept on it. I had it in my mind, like, it was, you know, woke up in the morning. I'm like, all right, let's see how the card, you know, card shaked out. And I saw that it was a decision, and you know, that he won. And then I saw it was a decision. I was like, oh man, he made it a dogfight. Like, he was able to really, you know, scrap it out. And then I started reading the reviews and the recaps and everything, and then started watching the replays. It was just, he bullied him.
Yeah, he dominated, dude.
Could you imagine trying to convince a casual fan that dude is supposed to be considered one of the GOATs? This obviously leaves a huge, you know, gap in there.
Yeah, but big blemish.
Dude, it was just, and it wasn't complicated. It was just go down there, jab, 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 straight jab. And I'm glad that he didn't finish him in the first, even though he was probably a couple punches away.
Yeah.
Because I know that they're calling, Dana is saying that he's open to an immediate rematch. He doesn't say he's going for it, but it's one of those things where if he would have put him out in the first, it'd been like, okay, he caught him in the first. He wasn't able to get going, but, you know, Izzy would came back in the second, won a little bit, and then from the third on. So it really just puts, a stop in an immediate rematch. Good for Sean Strickland, man.
I agree 100%. I don't think there's any grounds for a rematch. I mean, obviously, Izzy was a great champion, but on this title reign, he didn't even defend the belt yet. He just got it back from Pereira and now lost it very convincingly. And like you said, it wasn't like a flash knockout or a lucky moment or something like that. If he would have got that finish in the first round, maybe people would have said that. But it was just he dismantled him. You know, he beat him from pillar to post. It kind of reminds me of Cody Garbrandt versus Dominic Cruz in a way, because it was like everybody was like, ah, this is going to be easy work. This is a tailor-made matchup. You know, champion's going to do what he does. And then guy comes in, and even though he might not be the brightest, star in the tool shed or whatever they say, he just had that perfect game plan for that one opponent, and he really put it all together, man. It was a great performance. Good job, Sean Strickland.
It reminded me very similar of, and someone had made the connection of 193 was when Sonnen put it, or I forget what happened in 193. Someone was putting that the connection of like Sonnen versus Anderson Silva, that time that he just went out there and just dominated. It's very reminiscent, just, you know, on the feet, no takedowns. And that was the crazy one too. Everybody said that was the way that Strickland was going to win, was being able to out grapple him.
Yeah.
Was being able to, and he, none, zero.
Not a single takedown attempt.
Dude. Oh my God. And it was just bright. Like, I don't know what was up with Izzy, and, you know, and it, people can't have off, and that's, you know, fair, but no one should use it in his excuse. But it was just crazy to see Strickland walking him down, just yelling at him, hands down.
Yeah.
Like, dude, he is the person he is in any fight. I love that. That is,
yeah.
And side thing, he had a 10-8 on Izzy in the media conference. I love that. And the only fighter to mention China in the camp. So Sean Strickland is people's champs, and some people don't like it, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand he's a polarizing figure for sure.
Dude,
but
I saw a thing that he already broke his belt.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, he like tore off one of the things, but he duct taped it back together. It was ridiculous.
Hey, it's more better now.
Yeah, it's more better. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of Strickland. I never have been. But like, it is really inspiring to see him come from where he came from, get all the way to the belt, you know, and reach a pinnacle of the sport like that, especially taking out one of the, like you said, like one of the middleweight goats. You know, I think a lot of people have Anderson number one, Izzy number two. So for Strickland to turn in that kind of performance is super impressive. It's definitely not something to be, looked down on at all. Like, the dude, he pulled out all the stops. He got it all done, man. I'm proud of him. It's cool seeing how far he's come since his welterweight days of getting battered around by Kamaru Usman and Santiago Ponzinibbio. Now he's really coming to his own here at middleweight. And I think, you know, technically wise, like the way he did it, it wasn't like, I mean, yes, Izzy didn't really look like himself. He might have had a bad day in the office. But Strickland took away all his tools, you know, and it's something that we probably should have seen coming in the pre-fight lead up. Izzy's always had trouble with guys that throw double jabs, that throw a lot of jabs in fights where he gets jabbed up a lot. It's where you see him reach, you know, some adversity. In the Kelvin Gastelum fight, Kelvin was using his jab a lot. In the second Whitaker fight, which I personally felt like Whitaker won, Whitaker was landing a ton of jabs on Adesanya. Pereira, of course. So it's just like, you know, that's been a hole, or maybe not a hole, but that's been a weakness in Izzy's game for a while. And Strickland was able to use his I call it footwork, but it was really more like side shuffling and walking down to corral Izzy to the fence and make Izzy expend the energy of, you know, going one way and then jumping out the other, which he's really good at doing. He's really good at getting away from the fence. But to do it like 15, 20 times in a fight is just exhausting. And that's exactly what Strickland forced him to do. You know, he just kept putting him back on that position, jabbing him, pressuring him, pressure. And Izzy's not really a, I mean, he got the knockout in his last fight against Pereira with his back against the fence, but that's not really where he likes to do his work. You know, he wants you to come in recklessly so he can tag you. And Strickland just was not giving it to him. He didn't give him any overextensions. He didn't bite on any of the feints. He checked all the leg kicks. His defense is very interesting, and it gave Izzy a lot of problems. Kind of reminds me of Holloway versus Dustin in the second fight, where Dustin's using that Philly shell, and Holloway goes back to the corner, coming off of some of the best performances of his career, just can't get into Dustin's guard, and he tells his corner, like, he's blocking weird, man. I don't know what he's doing. He's blocking weird. And I feel like that's the feeling that Izzy had after that first round, where Strickland is just able to deflect a lot of his shots, and it paid a dividends, man. He put on a great performance. Super proud of him, man. Clearly studied.
Who gets the next title shot now that the middleweight division has been, you know, freshened anew, especially with Pereira moving out of the division? Izzy probably going to take a little bit of time off.
Yeah,
anyway,
and then Whitaker taking that loss too. Yeah. I mean, I think the fight to make is Jurkus Duplessis versus Sean Strickland. I like that matchup. I think it's an interesting fight, very physical fight. I'd like to see what happens there. And then, you know, I think they probably do, if Adesanya wants the rematch, they'll probably give it to him. But I think he should take some time off, maybe fight somebody like, I don't know, who the hell hasn't he fought in this top five, you know? I mean, he fought Cannonier, he fought Vittori, he fought Whitaker twice. He hasn't fought Duplessis, but Duplessis deserves a title shot after beating Whitaker like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure where Izzy goes from here, but I'd like to see Duplessis versus Strickland. Maybe they can do Whitaker versus Cannonier in the meantime, or Whitaker Adesanya 3. I don't know. But, yeah, that's
the fight. I would take Duplessis over Strickland, I think. I think Strickland might end up being a transitional champion.
Yeah, I mean, it's for sure, it's very possible, and I think Duplessis would not fall into the traps that Izzy did. He's a lot more aggressive than that. I think he'll be able to push a wrestling game plan on Strickland, and I don't know, though. Now I'm thinking about it, Strickland seems to have a lot better cardio than Duplessis, and it would be a five-round fight because it's a championship fight, so I kind of do like Strickland's chances, but either way, that's a very intriguing matchup, and I think it's one that they should put together, you know? I don't know if you've seen these memes of Strickland with the do-rag on and the Hennessy.
Oh, yeah,
Joe,
and he's got the blunt in his hand and everything.
Yeah, yeah, it says Deshaun Strickland. That shit is hilarious. Like,
dude, so, he is. Oh, man.
I mean, him versus Duplessis, the true African champion, you know what I mean? We'll see what happens.
Oh, man, UFC, dude. I was watching the countdowns, too, and I love some of the live stuff, and I love that the person with the bleeping button was like Sean Strickland was too fast for him.
Yeah,
like he was just like slipping in them in everywhere, and the dude couldn't keep up, so he's just like, screw it, man, we're just gonna take the charges,
dude. There was like a lot of really controversial post-fight interviews. I you said you didn't see the card live, so they probably scrubbed them from the internet, but I heard a couple F-bombs get dropped, you know, and not fuck, the other F-bomb. So it was like, Jesus Christ, what are we doing here, guys? Manel Cape and the guy that beat Blood Diamond, they both dropped it in the post-fight interview. It was ridiculous. I was like, what's going on here? There's a guy Strickland's in the main event. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just trickling down, you know, trickle down economics.
Well, speaking trickling down the card, I didn't, like I said, that was the only one that I was too encapsulated with the result of it to check on any of the other recaps.
Oh, man, it was a pretty good card, dude.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, Alexander Volkov put on a very good performance against Tai Tuivasa. I expected him to. We said in the pre-fight that he just has too many tools. He has the length, he has the grappling, he has, you know, the kicks. And it didn't help that Tuivasa came in looking like 5 years older than he did in his last fight. I don't know what he's been doing in the time off. I thought it would be good for him to have that time off after getting knocked out like he did. But I don't know. Maybe he's just been hitting the bottle too much, or he's just, you know, not taking the training too seriously. But that's what it looked like to me when he came in against Volkov. Volkov obviously just has a lot more experience and physical tools than Tuivasa, but I thought Tuivasa might have had a puncher's chance. I thought he would have been able to land a lot cleaner. He did land a few leg kicks, but Volkov eventually just, you know, broke him down, landed some big shots on the feet. At one point got a takedown, or I think maybe Tai Tuivasa tripped on something and Volkov followed him to the ground, and then he ended up getting the mount. Volkov, Tuivasa, to his credit, did look a little bit improved on the ground. He was able to shuffle out of the mount and get to half guard a couple times, but Volkov was just so good on top, he went right back to the mount and ended up snapping up an Ezekiel choke at the end of the second round, which was pretty interesting. He said that he learned it from Alexei Olenek, so I like that. That kind of passes down the lineage for me. And then they had Manel Kopp versus Felipe Dos Santos. That was a good fight. If you're going to rewatch any fight from this card, I'd recommend that one. Scorecards were 30-27, but honestly, I thought Felipe did enough to win at least one round. He was tough in there. Tafa got the first round knockout, like I predicted, which was good to see. Tyson Pedro got the finish, which was good to see. Anton Turkoglu must be getting cut now because he's just not putting in the performances you need to at the UFC level. I can't remember what else happened on the card, but it was a pretty solid card, man. Overall, there was a lot of finishes, at least in the main card. And for the TKO Nation, a pretty good betting night, because the only fight that we got wrong was the Strickland fight, which I think a lot of people got wrong. Yeah,
for real.
But yeah, solid card. I'm really excited to get into next week's card. Or this week's card, I should say. Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko 2. They're doing it in Nevada, but they're doing it on Mexican Independence Day, and they're kind of tailoring the card around that. They put a lot of Mexican fighters on this card. It would have been cool to see it in Mexico, but I guess they couldn't put that together for some reason. So starting from the top, they got...
That's close enough.
Yeah, I guess so, right? Nevada, New Mexico. I guess that's what they're going for. but yeah, so main event, title fight, rematch. Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko. Another fight that the challenger, who is a huge underdog that not a lot of people gave her a chance or them a chance, got it done in a pretty convincing way against a long-reigning champion. A long-reigning champion who's a counter-striker at that. A lot of similarities in this matchup, I guess. But yeah, Grasso came in super prepared for that first title fight against Shevchenko, and she was able to get the finish in the fourth round, I believe. The fight was pretty close up to that point, but I felt like Grasso was showing a lot of things that she could build off of in a potential rematch. And it seemed like she was the faster fighter and just a little bit more pop on her punches. You know, Shevchenko was able to get a lot done in the grappling, maybe not a lot done, but she was able to get a good amount of takedowns done in that first fight. Wasn't super active on top. But I'm sure that that's the game plan that she's going to be going for in this one, because it seemed like Grasso was just really fast on the feet, like way faster than she expected. And she stung her a couple times with some good punches there. So, yeah, rematch. I'm going to go with Grasso. Honestly, I think that first fight was very telling. I think Shevchenko has been on the decline for a couple years now. We saw her, you know, almost lose to Tyler Santos. We saw her lose to Grasso. And we've been calling for her to give up the belt for some time now, me and you, Jordan. So I think, you know, it was about time that she lost. And I don't see her style aging too well as she gets older and gets a little bit more slow reaction time. She kind of relies on her really fast reactions and her quick reflexes. And, you know, her striking advantage is obviously huge in most fights. But when she doesn't have a striking advantage, she has to rely on her grappling. And when she's on top, she's just not the most active. So I think if she does win this fight, it's a very boring lay and pray type decision where she holds her down or goes for head and arm chokes and you know, lays in that side saddle position. But I think Grasso is just too well-rounded. She's too fast. She's too hungry, too athletic. And on top of that, she seems very studied, you know. She was ready for a lot of Valentina's tricks in that first fight. And, you know, we call them her tricks. She has a lot of tricks. So does Izzy. But they do fall into the same patterns a lot in their fights. And that's the thing with being a dominant champion for so long, is that you got fighters that are coming up for years and years, studying you for years and years, and they figure out what doesn't work against, you know, what works against you and what your weak points are. So I think Grasso's definitely done that with Shevchenko, and I think she's going to come in even more studied and even more prepared, coming off of the confidence of having the belt, coming off the confidence of finishing Valentina Shevchenko, being the first person to finish her in the UFC. And I think she's going to get it done, man. I don't know if it'll be another finish or if she'll take her to decision, but I like Grasso's chances in the fight for sure.
It's just hard for me to bet against Valentina, you know what I mean?
I get it.
She's my girl. I like seeing the dance. I like. I don't want to see her leave the UFC, but I do think it is getting about that time. I think I would, win or lose, I would like to see her retire sooner or later.
Yeah,
and continue, keep that air of mystique on her.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But in this fight, I think Shevchenko is gonna get it done. I think she's gonna have shored up a lot of the things that she didn't do right in the first fight, and I think it's going to be a lot dirtier. I think it's going to be a close fight. I think you'll see, I think, unless Grasso can finish her again, I think you're going to see Valentina with it on the cards.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. She could get that wrestling game plan going and win a couple rounds that way.
Although it is Mexican independence, maybe Grasso gets that.
She's got the fighter spirit, you know?
She got the fighter. She's brewed with the fighting spirit.
Yeah, Grasso. I'll tell you that much. Yeah.
Sponsored by Modelo.
Yeah, Alexa Modelo Grasso.
No, I don't know, man. Grasso is tough. I constantly underestimate her. So yeah. I should preface my any kind of you know, predictions with that. I feel like I constantly underestimate her, and it's like, you know, when am I going to learn, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think Shevchenko is going to get done on the scorecards. I think that she's going to make, you're right. I think she's going to make it, like, you know, try to win, make it dirty, not try to do flashy. Hopefully she keeps the spinning stuff out, you know. Mm-hmm. It's time to retire those moves and fight a more solid game plan. So I think if she goes in with the idea of, you know, she's trying to just win and not worry about the flash of it, then I think Shevchenko can take it. Because when's the last time we really saw her fight that way, like cerebrally?
Who, Shevchenko?
Yeah.
I
feel like it's been a minute to see her, like, you know, because she gets away with it. And if you keep on getting away with wins in these close ones, it's like, all right, cool. Someone finally caught her, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like it would have been the same, like, with Anderson Silva had his leg not broken. Like, yeah. It would have been interesting to see, like, the, you know, a champion that has been able to get away with being flashy and do things that other people can't, and then finally get caught with it and then come back and be like, all right, you know, you get to see the real me, you know? So I'm interested to see how she comes back. So I have faith in Valentina, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah. I don't think it's crazy to be picking her in this fight. You know, that was her first finish loss. So I'm sure she's going to come back hungry. I'm sure she's going to have the fire lit under her. I'm just worried because I feel like I've been seeing her get slower over the years, and Alexa Grasso is one of the fastest women in the division. So if anybody could take advantage of that, you know, that athleticism starting to leave Valentina's game, it's going to be Grasso. And I don't know. I feel like she's going to get it done. Plus, at underdog odds again, after rewatching that first fight and seeing how much success she had, I got to side with the champ here, you know? But that being said, I don't think Valentina's done. I don't think she's going to, you know, if she loses this fight, I hope she doesn't retire, because she can definitely beat a lot of these top five flyweights. She can go and turn in a great performance against, you know, anybody in the top 10 or top five at flyweight. But there
But at 35, do you want to really be doing that? If you're like someone who is like a Shevchenko, do you really want to just be middling around in the top five till you slowly go down to the top 10 and then, you know, or is it just a call it on while you're on top?
I would, on top. Me personally, I would love to see her retire with, you know, one or two losses on her record. But this is a woman who's been fighting professionally since she was like 12 years old. I'm sure it's very hard for her to leave that space, you know? Even if she does transition into coaching or something, which I'm sure she'd be an excellent coach or an excellent training partner. I don't know. In my experience with these fighters that have been fighting since they're so young, doing Muay Thai, doing boxing or jiu-jitsu since they're so young, it's very hard for them to leave the competition aspect of the sport. You know, you see guys like Dan Henderson, who fought till he was like 47, you know, because he'd been wrestling since he was like 11. You know, and it's just like, how do you quit that? You know what I mean?
Dude, I know it. Dude, I'm still
Dan Cormier.
I'm coaching, dude. I'm still out there trying to do as long as I can.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to leave. It's hard to let it go. I get it.
It's got to be like one of her addictions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a bad addiction, being like, I'm addicted to going to a cage with a bunch of killers.
Yeah, facts. But I mean, honestly, like, I like her chances against everybody in the division not named Aaron Blanchfield or Tyler Santos. You know, I think she could beat Manon Fiorot. I think she could beat a lot of these flyweights, you know. But, you know, that we'll see how she does this weekend. I'm personally going to side with Grasso. I just think the youth, the athleticism, the speed, the training, I think it's just too much. And then, you know, tack onto it, she's got the confidence of having the belt and knowing that she can beat Valentina. She's going to be a lot more ready in this fight, even more so than she was in the first fight, I feel. So
I know you're excited for this co-main event.
Yeah, well, Jack Della Maddalena versus Kevin Holland, dude. Oh, my God.
Jackie D, baby.
Yeah, I'm excited for this fight. Honestly, I've been going back and forth on the pick. Who you got in this one?
I don't know, man. Jackie D's been pretty good to us.
Yeah, for sure.
He's been real good to us, you know what I mean, over here at the TKO bank. And I do like Kevin Holland, but I think Jackie D's the next big thing at welterweight. I think this is going to be a real coming out party for him. And it's a really good matchup with Kevin Holland because he's going to get a lot of moments that are going to get replayed on the YouTube and on Instagram and on the TikToks because Kevin Holland likes to talk. So this is a really, really big moment for Jackie D. So I think that he can come out here and I think he can deliver.
I think I agree that this is a huge spot for him. And I'm happy to see him get a big name, so to speak, in this division. I just think this is a tough stylistic matchup, man. Styles make fights. You saw Jack Della Maddalena go blood and guts with Basil Hafez in his last fight. A guy that just all he wanted to do was wrestle Jack. And, you know, he did end up winning that decision. But in my eyes, his stock kind of dropped a little bit in that fight. To be fair, he was coming off of like 2 weeks of cutting weight. He cut weight for Sean Brady the week before and then came in and fought this dude who came in on short notice who nobody heard of. So, you know, that probably affected his performance, having the two weight cuts in a row. But he just made a lot of fight IQ mistakes in that fight that I really didn't like to see. He would have Basil hurt and then shoot for a takedown and, you know, completely give up position, or Basil would shoot for a takedown on him, and instead of defending and just pushing him off and keeping beating him up, he would jump for a guillotine and end up on bottom position, which is exactly what Hafez wanted. So his stock went a little bit down, in my opinion, for that fight. Just the fight IQ kind of scared me. Obviously, he still has thunderous power on the feet. He's still got great shot selection with his body work. He still, you know, is the Jack Della Maddalena that we know and love. He's very tough. But he's fighting a guy in Kevin Holland who is kind of like the Chito Vera of welterweight, in that he's impossible to knock out. He's very hard to put away. And I think Maddalena, he gets a little crazy for the kill sometimes. You know, not to say that he goes wild, because he does kind of keep composed, but he loves the finish. And if he can't find that finish in this fight, I just worry that Holland might be able to wear on him as the fight goes on. Maddalena's cardio did not look stellar in that last fight. Again, coming off of two weight cuts. So maybe that affected his performance a lot more than I'm giving him credit for. But yeah, stylistically, I think it's a tough matchup. I mean, Holland is very tall. He's very lanky.
Yeah,
I know
what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, Randy Brown was also very tall and lanky, and I thought that'd give Maddalena a lot more trouble. But Randy Brown is human and Holland is not. Randy Brown can get hurt by punches, and I've never seen Holland even really get stunned. So I think it's a very interesting fight. You know, I like Holland at the underdog odds. I think he might be able to outlast Jack Della Maddalena. But that being said, you know, you can't Homer Simpson your way to every victory. If Maddalena just, you know, stays on his game plan, stays on his boxing, he can definitely win the first two rounds, if not win all three, and just, you know, cruise comfortably to a decision. I don't really see him getting a knockout. If he does get a knockout, he'd have to do it with like body shots, I think. But Holland's just way too tough, man. I can't see him getting finished. So I'm going to go that the fight goes to decision, I think, or at least goes to the third round. I think that'll probably end up being my bet. I might sprinkle a little bit on Holland to win money line, because I could see him getting a late finish or getting a decision victory, wearing out Maddalena and winning the second and third round. Who you got?
I got Jackie D by decision. I think you're going to see him put the pressure. If this was a five-round affair, I'd be more likely to favor Holland, although I could see him getting in a sneaky submission in the third or
something.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking, too. That's what I was picturing.
But I'm gonna ride with Jackie D to get this done decision. I think you'll see him push the pace. He might gas out a little bit in a round, and I think that's when you'll see Kevin Holland kind of capitalize. But I think you'll see Jackie D pull it out. I'd say 29-28 probably.
I hope so. You know, I want to see Maddalena continue to rise through the ranks of this division, and I like his chances against the top five a lot. This is just a weird matchup that I feel like stylistically is tougher for him than even like a Leon Edwards would be, you know?
It's a good test for him, man.
Yeah.
It's a great test. If he gets by it, you know, he's in that top one, so.
100%. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited.
The welterweight division's pretty wide open. I was just seeing this, I just saw this meme that was showing like the top welterweights, and the last time they competed, like Burns was
been
the
a long time.
Like everybody else is like 6 months, 8 months, 9 months.
Yeah, Bilal and Burns fought a few months ago, and that was the only like top five fight that's been made in a long time.
Yeah, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, yeah, that's right. I've seen Neil Magny fight like 10 times since
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. Ian Garry as well is keeping busy for the division.
That's what I'm saying, dog.
I'd like to see Ian Garry versus Jack Della Maddalena, honestly. I think that's a really good fight.
A good fight.
But those are like the new breed, you know? So maybe you should give them the old guard to try to eat the young or whatever they say, you know, old.
That's what they did with Neil Magny. Ian Garry beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah, facts. I'd like to see Garry keep fighting up in this weight class. But yeah, enough about the Irishman. This fight's awesome, though. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's a good spot. I'm glad this is a co-main in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that the fight starts third round. I don't know if I'm going to take a pick. I might put it on Holland eventually, but a couple other fights on this card. Raul Rosas Jr. is coming back. He's fighting Terrence Mitchell, who is very all right. You're thinking of Terrence McKinney. Terrence Mitchell is a pretty solid fighter. I don't think he's ever been submitted. So, this is kind of a different matchup for Rosas Jr. He's also a lot more physical. He's a bigger dude. Obviously, he's older because Rosas is like 18. It's a pretty interesting fight. They have Rosas at like a minus 600, which I feel like is a little ridiculous. I mean, Mitchell's not a world beater by any means, but, you know, we saw Rosas get exposed.
That's what I don't like about him competing at 18 in this. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's the same in kickboxing and Muay Thai and everything else, but it's just
too much.
I don't know. There's a weird amount of pressure to put it on this kid at 18 years old.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, yeah, he's done really good work against some of these jobbers, but he's not going to get to the top of the division anytime soon. I hope they really slow his build up.
Let's say, you know, not to derail this, but let's say he puts together a 2-3 fight win streak, and then they throw him against fight like, you know, legit top of the division killers.
Like Umar Nurmagomedov or some.
Yeah, 22. They're gonna like, you know, it's gonna cause him severe physical damage.
Yeah,
like in a sport that is caused like where you cause severe physical damage. Like I would love to see. I don't know, because he'd probably be too much for a regional circuit. He's probably in that weird phase where it's like, where do you go?
Yeah,
because like look at Sage Norcutt. Like we haven't heard very much from him in like years.
Yeah,
I remember very same boat.
Yeah, I mean, he went to Japan or Singapore rather, and they put him against like a fucking 35-year-old kickboxer with a ton of experience, and he got his face broken in like a minute. It was ridiculous. They really fed him to the fucking slaughter there. I don't want to see that happen to Rosas Jr. I don't want to see what happened to Chase Hooper happen to Rosas Jr. I'd much prefer that he goes the Charles Oliveira route and stays, you know, in the UFC or around the UFC for a long time until he really comes into his own altogether. Right now, he's a great grappler, though. And I think he would just smush a lot of dudes on the regional scene, which is why he got this shot in the UFC. But again, in that last fight, he showed a lot of you know, inexperience, which of course you come to expect from an 18-year-old in the UFC. And I just think that Terrence Mitchell's, he's not that bad, dude. Like at plus 400 or plus 500, whatever they have him at, I really feel like it's kind of insane. Like even just on physicality alone, the dude is pretty strong and he hasn't been finished on the ground. So if you do like Rosas in the fight, I'd go Rosas by decision. I don't know. I feel like, they're kind of, they inflate the odds on these people that have so much hype. I'm gonna put a little tenor on Terrence Mitchell just because I don't really believe Rosas Jr. that much, you know?
Yeah, well, and I don't want to say it's I don't believe in him yet. He's just, it's just too early, you know? Maybe it ends up being one of them, I don't know. I just think, like I said, when I see someone competing at 18 against like 33-year-olds, it's I'm going to take Terrence Mitchell. I think that we're going to see a better version of Rojas Jr., but I still think it's just too much for him right now. I'd like to see a couple of years of focused training from him, but I could be eating my words this time come next week. So we shall see.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Mitchell's, record, he has a lot of first round finishes. He has a lot of finishes in general. Rosas does seem super tough. Of course, Mitchell's not fighting the highest competition in these regional fights, but he fought Cameron Simon in his first fight in the UFC, and I rate Cameron Simon pretty high. So I don't really, you know, I don't take too much stock off of it for him losing that fight. But, you know, I think this is a good matchup. I just don't like such a big ticket against a guy who's relatively unproven and very young and can make a lot of stupid mistakes in there. So I'm going to go with Mitchell just on GP. You know, yeah, a couple other fights on this card I wanted to talk about. Not a ton of big names on this fight card, but there is a lot of really interesting matchups. They got Daniel Zellhuber versus Christos Gagos. Christos Gagos is pretty solid grappler base. I believe he's a Greek dude. He did get a knockout over Ricky Glenn in his last fight, who's, you know, super tough. And his losses in the UFC are against solid names, guys like Charles Oliveira, Jakar Close, Arman Tsarukyan, Thiago Moises. These are all really good fighters, you know. And now he's coming in against Daniel Zellhuber, who is a contender series fighter, boxer type guy from, I believe he's Mexican, actually, which would make sense considering the card. And Zellhuber looked amazing on the contender series, came in the UFC and completely shit the bed. Had those first fight jitters, I believe. I think he did win his next fight, but he didn't look like the guy that looked like on the contender series, you know? So he beat Lucas Almeida on the contender series, then he lost to Trey Ogden, which was a bad loss, and then he beat Lando Venata in a pretty close fight. He's a flashier fighter, and seems to have a high skill ceiling, you know? He's a young dude. But I don't know. I like Gagos at underdog odds, you know. I know his record's not stellar. I know he's fought some, he's lost to a lot of people in the UFC. But again, the people he's lost to are very solid fighters. So there's not a lot of shame in losing those fights. I like the underdog in this matchup. I think Gagos might be able to put back Daniel Zellhuber. And I think Zellhuber is a young dude. He might be one of those guys that improves a lot from fight to fight. I might be eating some crow come next Wednesday, but I'm gonna go with Gagos here.
No, I agree with you. I think it's a solid pick, especially for if you're looking for value on this, you know, if you're just trying to make some money off of it, it makes more sense to go with the underdog in this one. I feel Daniel's, yeah, is he, how much is he, he's a favorite by?
He's like -300, so they got Gagos at +2.
I mean, it just makes more sense. I mean, there's not, I would, it'd be very hard to predict the way that it goes out, so I mean, trying to make money, I would go underdog on this one.
Yeah. A couple other fights, Fernando Padilla versus Kyle Nelson. I do not believe in Kyle Nelson at all. This is one of those cases where I'm going to bet against a fighter rather than betting on a fighter. Fernando Padilla is coming off of a first round knockout over Juicy J, Julian Arosa. And Julian Arosa, I rate pretty highly. Kyle Nelson does not have that striking defense or chin, and Padilla hits pretty hard. So I'm going to go with Padilla here. He's a favorite, so the odds makers agree with me. But I do think he gets it done in this fight. Another couple fights to talk about. Lupita Godinez versus Elise Reed. This is one that I'm super excited for on the prelims. Elise Reed, kickboxer type, looks like Mark Zuckerberg in the face, which I think is pretty funny. It's fucked up to say, but it's true. She has a nice sidekick. She has a nice one, too. She's pretty fast on the feet.
Holy shit, she does.
Yeah, she does look like that. Yeah.
Is that what they call her, the Zuck?
Is that what they call her? Oh, man.
No.
She's from Jersey.
What we call her, though.
Oh, I didn't know that. She's fighting out of Jersey. Well, now that changes my pick. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, she's a good striker. Has shown a lot of weaknesses on the ground, though. And she's fighting Lupita Godinez, who also known as
Lupi. I feel
Lupi.
Like I just heard her name. Like, didn't we just talk about her?
Yeah, I mean, she's pretty active, dude. I think this is her third fight in 2023. She was going for a record of the fastest turnaround in fights, but she ended up losing. But she's a good fighter, dude. Very solid wrestling and kind of a pacemaker on the feet, you know? Kind of reminds me of Mirab Dvalishvili in that sense. But I think, you know, she would stand to use her wrestling. She would stand a lot better to use her wrestling in this fight. If she employs a wrestling game plan, pushes at least Reed against the fence, takes her down, there's really not much of a path to victory for Reed in this fight if she does that. But Godinez has fallen in love with the brawl before against long, lanky strikers like Elise Reed and Angela Hill. Angela Hill's a dog, though, for sure. So, you know, it's not impossible that Elise Reed gets it done, but, you know, I think this is a gimme fight for Godinez. They want her to win on the Mexican market. They want her to win. You know, they gave her kind of a favorable matchup in this one. If she uses the wrestling, it's going to be a long night for Elise Reed. So I like Godinez in the fight. another fight I want to talk about was Roman Kopylov versus Josh Fremd. Kopylov looks really good, man. I think he has a victory over Punahil Soriano, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Knocked out Funil Soriano, knocked out Claudio Ribeiro, knocked out Alessio Di Chirico. Lost a couple fights when he first came into the UFC, but now is really coming to his own. Another young dude. He's 32. I thought he was younger than that, but he's certainly young in fight years. And he just seems very well-rounded. He hits hard. He has a good grappling game. He's fighting Josh Fremd, who is kind of just a dog fighter. You know, the dude goes out there and makes it ugly. And has a, you know, pretty slick jiu-jitsu game, all things considered, but really tends to try to keep it on the feet more than anything and make it a dogfight. And I just think that's a bad style for Kopylov. He's a little bit too clean on the feet for that, and I think he's going to get it done, probably by finish. Another fight to talk about here is Tracy Cortez versus Jasmine Jazudowicz. This is a very interesting matchup at women's flyweight. Jazudowicz, I can't say her name. I'm just going to call her Jasmine. Jasmine is coming off of that victory over Miranda Maverick in Canada, where she looked amazing. Turned back perennial, overrated favorite Miranda Maverick. Jasmine has a pretty well-rounded game, and if I'm not mistaken, I think she was the Invicta champion before she came to the UFC. And she's fighting Tracy Cortez, who is another fighter on the rise. Another similar to Lupi Godinez, who has a very physical and pace forward style. She likes to wear down her opponents. She's undefeated in the UFC and has, you know, turned in a few solid victories there against Melissa Gatto, Stephanie Egger, Maria Agapova, and Justine Kiesch. All of them have gone to decision, but, you know, that doesn't mean she's not putting on exciting fights. Jazudowicz is a little bit more of a finisher. She does have a lot of decisions on her record, as you know, you come to expect in these fights, but she also has a few finishes as well. So I'm really excited for this matchup. I'm not really sure who to pick, but I just think that the winner is going to be somebody to watch for in this division for years to come. I'm kind of feeling Cortez. I think she might be able to just be a little bit more of a dog in there and win some scrambles and positions that Miranda Maverick was a little bit too complacent in to beat Jasmine. But that being said, Jasmine's been improving every fight, so I wouldn't be surprised if she comes out and just, you know, puts on another great performance. Yeah, that's all I got for this card. Let's run down the betting slip real quick. Jordan, who you got on this one?
I'm going to take Shevchenko by decision. I'm going to take Jacky D by decision. I'm going to take Terrence Mitchell money line. And then I'm going to take Christos Gaios by money line.
I like the picks. I'm gonna go Alexa Grasso, money line. I'm just gonna go with Kevin Holland. I don't know. I think he might be a little bit too physical, a little bit too sturdy for Madalena. I hope Madalena wins, but I'm gonna go with Holland. I'm gonna go with Terrence Mitchell again for the underdog pick. And I'm going to go with Fernando Padilla by knockout. I think he's going to get it done. I think he's going to finish Kyle Nelson. Kyle Nelson has been pretty good these last couple fights, but I don't trust him. So I'm going Grasso, Holland, Mitchell, Padilla, and I'll tie it up with Roman Kopylov as well. Pretty solid fight night. Not a ton of huge names, but a lot of fights to learn from and a lot of young fighters that we could see being mainstays in the division for years to come. You know, you got Rosas Jr., you got Madalena, Zellhuber, Kopylov, Godinez, Cortez, Jesse Davikis, a lot of good fighters on this card that can be real contenders in the future. So one to study for sure. I'm excited to see how it all unfolds. I think we're going to have Ann Still at the end of it, and we'll see the women's flyweight title really start to flourish as Valentina starts to leave the division. Next week, there's another banger fight card. They got Rafael Fazia versus Mateusz Gamrot, Bryce Mitchell versus Dan Ige, Tim Means versus Andre Fialho, Brian Battle versus AJ Fletcher. There's a lot of really good fights on this card. I'm really excited to break it down. Javid Basharat's coming back. Jacob Balkun's coming back. Some of our favorites on this podcast. So stay tuned for that one. Thank you so much for listening, y'all.
And, by the way, it's been 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. Was... Happy anniversary, TKO. Happy
anniversary, TKO Nation, for the people that have been following us. You know where we started from.
Word. Thank you guys for the continued support. You know, we made it one full year. I think it's to the day, actually.
I think so.
You know, we did Corey Sandhagen versus Song Yadong. That was the first podcast. And now see where both those guys are in the division. It's pretty awesome to see how everything's unfolded. You know, I appreciate y'all for the continued support. Thanks for sticking through it, Jordan. You know, it's been a pleasure. Yeah,
this is what we're here for.
First year of many years to come, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Take it easy, y'all. Thank you for listening. And let's get this bread this weekend, man. Peace out.
Fucking easy peasy.
Yeah, that was a good one, I feel, you know? It was a...